All right. Hey.
What's up?
Hey, how's it going? I think this is our second time, right?
Yes.
Is it record only or audio only or video too?
I was gonna do video too. I can do it audio only if you want, but I usually try to publish these to YouTube and Rumble as well, whenever I can.
I mean, either works really. It's up to you. So is the how about my lighting? Is it okay?
It's a little
I
dark,
guess.
but I mean, I can
A bit
see you
dark,
if you can.
but... All right. A bit more shadowy, super quarter vibe, but maybe I can put on more light maybe and see. Actually, I can light it up. Well.
Oh, there we go. I love the axe on the wall.
I mean, hence the name suggests it's Bitcoin Audible. I thought it was Bitcoin audio only until,
It
but
was for a really long time. It was for a really long time.
okay, that's fair. I don't because I don't remember the first time that it was audio only or what, but okay, anyway, here we go. Funny, right?
Is there anything in particular you want to bring up or you want me to lead you into? That because I'm mostly my two big things that whenever you come up that are or that pop into my mind that I wanted to talk to you about were the Arc 2.0, basically, and then also you basically came up with the idea of Brolabs, right? Like,
Roll up. Not the plural one. Yeah, that was my bad. It was
yeah,
supposed to be singular, right? Roll up. Where did the S come from? Basically two main things, right? There's Arc. Yeah, also V2. V2 isn't really much of a big thing, really. I mean, we'll come to that in a bit because it's maybe I'll briefly mention V2. But yeah, it's mostly about roll up. Right,
Okay.
I want to go through like to basically covering two main topics and like Arc and Roll Up. There is lots to cover, and I guess that should pretty much sum it up.
Okay. All right, cool.
Arc and
Sounds
Roll
good.
Up. All right,
All
let's
right.
see
Well,
here.
I'm good if you're good. You're gonna just get into it?
We can get into it. Just give me a second, though.
Yeah,
Just
yeah.
give me a second.
Yeah, take your time.
All right. I'm here. I'm back. So, I guess, yeah, it's good to go. I just got my water.
All right. Sounds good. Let me close out some stuff. Make sure I don't have too much shite running in the background here. LogSec. Ooh. You shouldn't be open. And quit. Sorry, I had way more stuff open than I thought.
Right, no worries. No worries at all.
Okay, I think we're better. We're better. All right.
All right.
Start recording. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. What is up?
Here we go.
Here we go. All right,
Here we go,
Barack.
guys.
We are back. We are back. This is our second show together. And you came on when Arc was still an idea. And you had not. Basically put code to computer for that one yet. And a lot has happened on that front. But then you've also started into additional projects and additional ideas that I think extend, as I was reading, it seems to extend what you had built kind of as the premise for ARK, if I'm not mistaken. But I'll let you kind of get into that. For those of you who do not know, you should definitely go back if you want to kind of get a deep dive on the edge cases of ARK. We already did that episode. We'll be covering some of it here just because there are new things with ARK as well. And now there's actually an implementation of it, which is super exciting. But Burak, man, welcome to the show. It's right. Really great to have you. I'm glad we got to schedule this here at the last minute. So thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me. I guess I was promised to be on this show about a month ago. So sorry for latency, really. I was really tied up with things.
No worries.
I guess this happens to be our second ever show, and time flies. It's been a year almost. And so I guess it's been almost about come along, since the announcement. But things have changed a lot, right, since then. Well, it's exciting times overall, no? lots happening, lots to cover. I don't know where to start. So basically ARK. ARK is great, actually. No? ARK, it's been more than about a year. Because I've been working on the idea about 2 years by now. I really envision ARK to be this payment scaling tech and such. In fact, as many of you know, it started off as a Lightning Wallet idea, and later it turned out to be it seemed more like a distinct layer 2 of its own and such story. It turns out over time, of course, we've got a great reception overall.
Mm-hmm.
People overall had good reception and got quite some good feedback. And people equally, we got a good reception equally. People were equally skeptical though. People had some concerns in and around liquidity issues and lockup and interactivity and such. But liquidity so far has been the main concern, right? Because it's a liquidity network, like Lightning, but to the extreme. The more volume gets, the more liquidity, the service provider has to lock up. It's a different sort of design. But
out of curiosity, just so I can give my vague view of it, I don't have deep specifics, but as I understand it, because you are guaranteeing the funds for each transaction as it happened, but you still have funds in previous transactions that the ARK service provider now basically has the final key essentially to take, but there's still that lock, a month lock or something like that? Is that right?
That's right.
So that means that let's say there's 1 million sats and an exchanges hands 10 times in that month. That means you need 10 million sats worth of locked up until the month rolls over and it starts unlocking those funds again, right?
Time spent, yes.
Okay, exactly. Gotcha.
If you hand it over 10 times, say during that 1 month period, you got to lock up that many times of the funds. Mm-hmm. That 10 times X more liquidity, that's sort of a trade-off. But it turns out, of course, I've also announced the V2 design, and which I guess removes a bit of friction there. I mean, in fact, it makes it streamlines the liquidity problem a bit. Well, actually, to a certain degree, too. I mean, in fact, it kind of fixes the liquidity problem. There's some non-unknowns, of course, but the V2 design, it relies on common, it's a common design, it needs a common opcode, checksig from stag and CTV, and frankly, common discussions are heating up lately, but common, it turns out if you can run ARK on a server, none of these problems hold, right? If you can, it's a big if, though, if you can run ARK like on an umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
Liquidity is not an issue, right? Because you can run Arc on like daily 24 hour rounds, right?
Yeah, you don't have to do the month lockup necessarily.
Yeah, you don't have to do the month, because like when you can run a server, you can opt into a reactive model, and when you can opt into a reactive model, that means you don't need to necessarily wait like a month. All it takes is just like 24 hour round, and you can opt in to more. But if you want, but I mean, like daily rounds is okay. That means like the service provider, their liquidity gets recycled daily,
mm-hmm.
then monthly.
Are those parameters easily configurable?
Not quite really. Like, I mean, yeah, of course, like it's up to the protocol design implementation. But like if you were to set it for another like time period, then it means you need another on-chain outputs. Like, cause like each transaction outputs, if you to say you, like for each setting, you need another transaction output. Like for 24 hour rounds, you need one. For 1 month rounds, you need another.
Okay.
Because the time lock condition is explicitly hard coded. Like,
yeah.
And that's the output. So ideally the Fever configurations, the better. But like Arc is great. Like if you can run a server, it's great. Like not only liquidity becomes it solves the liquidity problem, you can also opt into a covenant model. Like you can emulate covenants without a soft fork, if you're online running a server, you can emulate covenants with MuSig. And MuSig, it's basically pre-signing transactions, kind of like Lightning. Lightning is kind of a covenant, some sort. But
it's kind of a pseudo covenant, yeah.
Yes, covenant. If you're running a server, you don't need you can emulate a covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, also liquidity gets efficient, so it works. It's you can deploy it in Bitcoin today,
yeah.
Literally. Right? If you think about it. And that's awesome. Like all you need to do is to run a server.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a big exception, and of course in Bitcoin Twitter and such, we're all surrounded by Bitcoiners and nerds and such. But like normies don't run nodes. I get it. But like I think it's a great fit for retail, like Lightning retail merchants and B2B. Businesses can run a node, like i.e. merchants can too. I'm not sure if like there is a BTC Pay plugin for like Arc. Like I'm not sure, but you could simply run a server in instance and software, and like you don't need to take any additional steps because like it's not like because it's all taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that's the inherent design. Like it's the inherent design, like the choices we make, right? Mm-hmm. I mean the benefits you get versus Lightning. Like you need to take care of liquidity and channels, not necessarily because it's complex. Complexity it's not a concern because you can run stuff on autopilot. Concern is like on chain, like channel liquidity management takes on chain action.
Yeah.
Right. If you were to say, if you have liquidity is like two-edged sword, right? On one edge, you have liquidity abundance, and you have to splice it out, right? Swap out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's because that's unutilized. Unutilized liquidity, it needs to be swapped out, spliced out, or whatever. Or in the, like to the opposite, on the other edge, you have liquidity scarcity. In that case, you need to acquire liquidity or rent liquidity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's an under on-chain transaction. So that's what Arc solves mostly. And if you do it in like very short time frame rounds, and then if you can run a server, you can do it. Well, it's pretty much streamlined. And like it just works, right? I mean, it's also great for privacy, right? Like
I wanted to ask about the privacy attributes, exactly how our exchanges happen. Like if I'm running an Arc service provider and you and my brother are making an exchange, what does that look like from my side?
Yeah. So it's like Arc has built-in privacy. One could argue if Lightning has privacy or not. Depends really on the LSB model, right? Like if you feed LSB and then, well, LSB in theory can collude versus Arc. Like Arc, you don't necessarily need like a node ID, an entity to really be part of it. Like IE. Like, and the dark merchants would never use Lightning, right? Because, well, you need a node ID, an entity. Well, no, like, I mean, it's a no, right? Like, you would never run, ever, like, even attempt to think of, like, running a node, right? Lightning node. No, like, it's a no. But versus Arc, it's, you're not a node or entity. All you are is entropy, right? You're not but an entropy, a public key, right? You're just a public key with like silent payment style tweaking. So it's like that means like no address reuse in a convenient way, just like on-chain Bitcoin, but in a more convenient way. Also, it has built-in mixing, like built-in confidentiality, right? Like by default, coins gets mixed in each round, right? And so it's like in a scalable and convenient way. And so it's all private. It's you can't tell who pays what and when and what amount really. So it is great and appealing for privacy people. And I can see Arc dominating dark web really. Like quite literally. Like from dark merchant, I'd rather run an Arc node and it's hassle-free, really, because it's not only convenient. That's not the point. It's also private, like it's a mixture of some sort, like it's convenient for normal merchants, right? Like merchants who sell pupusas as an LSL is great, convenient. For end users, like for institutions, it's great too, because like. You can run B2B volume on Arc. It's just simply because like you're running it on daily rounds. Right? Institutions can run nodes. And liquidity is not an issue there. And you can run B2B, like retail, like daily commerce and such on Arc. It's great, but like there's a big if, and that if is running a node, it's fine. I guess, but for normies, yeah, that's where the problem comes, right? That's what I've envisioned Arc to be was to really be this consumer facing products like scaling
It's like the
solution.
solution to retail. It's like the solution to Wallet of Satoshi, right? Is how do you scale and make Wallet of Satoshi non-custodial while still enabling kind of a lot of those features and expectations of Wallet Satoshi and enabling a service provider to essentially take all the complexity out of it. So everybody can always redeem their coins with or without Wallet of Satoshi being around and also be able to get privacy from Wallet of Satoshi and the general the anonymous the anon set of everybody using it, and not have this huge on-chain footprint at the same time.
Right. All at the same time, right? It's a
Yeah.
problem. Well, actually, this is what Brawlup kind of solves, except privacy. Well, we'll come to Brawlup in a bit. But, well, for Arc, yeah, end users, like, yeah, like, first, like, two barriers there, right? First, you need a covenant, right? Period. Like, for end users, you need a covenant. For, like, institutions and, like, merchants now, because you can run a server for
Everybody can
normies,
just
like,
run one all the time, yeah.
all you have is a smartphone, right? Like you can't sign, you can pre-sign. Maybe some watchtower of some sort, but no, that's semi-trusted. But like again, all you have is eCash, right? Or some custodial solution for now.
Oh, I actually got a question. I didn't realize. I'm not 100% sure if I knew how this worked. Is since you have kind of like a silent payment tweak to the public key when you're making a payment, is it much more similar to from the user side, much more similar to a like an on-chain address where like it's push, it's a push payment? Like, do you have to be online to sign to receive? Or can someone push a payment to you through the Arc?
Yeah, so for Arc, assuming you're running a server, well, it's it could be, it depends on the implementation, but in theory, mm-hmm. it could just like, it's just like an address, it's dedicated mm-hmm. address, you know, provided to you, right? It's like a dedicated piece of string.
Mm-hmm.
Well, could be an NPUP too, I guess. Like in theory, it does, yeah. It's just dedicated piece of address, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and when you whenever you attempt to make a payment, you join around, kind of like coin join, you register inputs and such. But like then the output is though is tweaked. The operator cannot tell who you are paying to or attempting your payment to,
mm-hmm.
because it's tweaked by some data only known between the two parties, some Diffie-Hellman key exchange magic in between, like. It's a dedicated address, but the resulting output is is unlinked or unidentifiable to the dedicated address. So that's where the magic.
Gotcha. So the address isn't like an doesn't expose all of the payments that go to you. It's just a way to have a way for someone to generate something that will only be unlockable by you. So it's not like a pub key. If I post my pub key, everybody can just know all of my addresses and all of my balances. Yeah.
You're not getting paid to the dedicated address.
Yeah.
The dedicated address or information piece of string is only used to derive your destination, the destination, which is unlinkable to the dedicated address. Of course, amounts and everything is public, but it's a mix. It's a mixer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a big much of an issue. So versus Brolop, to the opposite, it's a privacy nightmare. It's a nightmare.
Okay.
If you're into privacy or privacy guy, well, it's not your type. Like, it's trade-offs and engineering web trade-offs. So it is an account model. Like, Brolop is an account. We're following an account model.
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar with Ethereum and EVMs, it's very much like that. It's much worse than on-chain Bitcoin, because on on-chain Bitcoin you have like at least address, you don't have address reuse there, right?
Mm-hmm. If you don't address, you can separate addresses in the same wallet, and as long as you don't cross sign them, it won't be obvious that you own them both. So
right,
like, you have so coin control
spectrum, right? If you put privacy, Bitcoin privacy in the spectrum, like Oric is on the far edge, right edge, super private, like superior privacy. You not only tweak the keys, you also mix them
mm-hmm.
by default, baked into, down into protocol,
mm-hmm.
right? The default by privacy by default. And maybe on-chain Bitcoin in the middle of the spectrum, not bad, but not that great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Brolop, it's an account model. It's a goddamn account model. It's always the same address and publicly available. Everyone knows who pays who and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Just like Ethereum, Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Bitcoin, BTC, like literal BTC. It's not a federated BTC of some sort. It's trustless. It's a real Bitcoin. It's self-custody. I'll come to details, but like it's Bitcoin. It's self-custody. Mm-hmm. But like it is, it's all public.
Mm-hmm.
Not appealing to many. Perhaps to some it is, like maybe to some people might prefer public publicity over confidentiality,
mm-hmm.
for verifiability or reasons of or whatever. But like it is a public design. It's all public. Like we'll have explorers, like mempool, like you can see who pays you, literal. Like that's mm-hmm. not the case for Lightning. It's kind of like on-chain Bitcoin, but it's even worse because you know who pays who. Literal, literally what MPUB paid on MPUB and what MPUB mm-hmm. public. Well, the that's a downside. Well, to some it's not a downside, but to some it is. To many Bitcoiners, like for the average DeFi user, like that's what you're used to. That's what they like use it anyway. Mm-hmm. And they're the same for Bitcoiners. Well, yeah, it's not quite nice. Like they may not opt into this kind of trade-off. This type of construction is probably a non-starter for them, but mm-hmm. like the pro is, Well, the upside, it is maybe it's better to dive more into specifics. So Brawlup is a payment channel design.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe the broader category for this would be the state channels, the broader category. Mm-hmm. It's not state chain, state channels, but maybe better.
So it's a little bit like Lightning architecture wise.
Lightning, by category state channel, but maybe better call it payment channel, right? Mm-hmm. Simpler for the better. It's a payment channel design, like Lightning, but it's all public. Like you have channels, a bunch of channels, and there's global state, and global state is channel state aware.
Mm-hmm.
So you have channels, and you make payments between the channels, and everyone sees and knows and audits who pays who. Like what? Like you make channel from a channel to another channel,
mm-hmm.
and everyone sees it. Versus Lightning, you have a channel and it's all private. Only the involved parties know
where the route went. Yeah.
Who owns what. Yeah. Like Lightning, it's all between the two parties, me and the counterparty.
Mm-hmm.
Self and remote, only the two parties know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Versus Brawlup, well, it's a channel too. It's me and channel partner. My channel partner is the operator, kind of like LSB or ASB.
Mm-hmm.
But like everyone knows who pays who and from what channel to what, like to from the channel to the destination, what amount. It's all made public. It's all public. And we do so by putting it on Bitcoin mm-hmm. data in a very compact way, in such a compact and compressed way that it could get, it scales well, like get like 3 TPS, digit TPS numbers. Maybe we can come to that in a bit, but like the benefit for doing that, of course, the downside is it's public.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad for privacy, but.
Well, from the context of privacy, is there anything that exposes who you are on the network? So like, let's say I wanted to create an anonymous account, do 200 payments and then exit the Brawlup. Is there anything explicitly that exposes me other than the fact that that account, if I post it publicly from my Nostr ID or something, well, then obviously it's mine, or I'm attesting to the fact that it's mine. And so people can then connect all those payments. But if it's just random and out there, and let's say I used a VPN or I did it over Tor, is there anything specific that links it in any other way? Or is it just that all payments are visible to that account? And if you can find out who owns the account, then you have no privacy.
All payments are visible to everyone at all times from start, start of the lifetime till the end. Like,
okay.
Whatever. Like, it's all the same address, key, mm-hmm. NPUB. Use the NPUBs.
It's basically like handing out your public key to somebody else and then making that public.
Even, you know who you're following. I'm not sure. Yeah. You just send your dude some
Zaps. Exactly. It's like Zaps. Zaps are completely open. Yeah.
Kind of that thing, but it's more like a check-in account manner, right? Mm-hmm. It's more a checking account, so it's like this payment layer. It's a layer two.
Mm-hmm.
It's a layer two, but it's all public and NPUBs, and you and everyone sees who pays who, kind of like an EVM setting. And we do so by inscribing more in Bitcoin terms, maybe for the better to understand, inscribing the data, like the payment info, kind of like maybe compact block filter sort of, but not really. Like mm-hmm. describing very minimal data, like putting data on Bitcoin in such a compact way that it gives you the, and like it leaks who pays who and what amount
mm-hmm.
And whatnot. And the benefit is that you don't have to deal with backups. No backups.
Wait, what?
No backups.
How does that work?
Because it's public, and what we're putting on chain is also, it lets you reconstruct the channel state by just looking at the data, Bitcoin on-chain data.
Yeah.
You can reconstruct your channel state.
So you can just check against it with your seed. I mean, you still have your seed backup. You just don't have to have a wallet backup.
Exactly. All you need to remember is your private key.
Yeah.
Right? Your NSEC or whatever, mnemonics. Yeah. And like, you don't have to deal with the wallet, like the channel states. You don't have to backup them. It's all on-chain. Like, you can reconstruct the whole thing from the Bitcoin on-chain data.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm certain, I guess I'll happily trade privacy for that.
Yeah.
But to some, it's appealing. It's kind of like on-chain Bitcoin, right? You don't have to deal with wallet backups.
Mm-hmm.
All you need to remember is your private key.
Yeah.
So the trick is storing data, putting data on Bitcoin, like the entire state, right? It's a global state, right? It's effectively, rollup is a payment rollup. Or Bitcoin rollup, right? Hence the name suggests.
It's a
payment rollup. Of course, plus smart contracts. Maybe like we'll come to that later. But like it's at its core, it's a payment rollup for Bitcoin. It's a layer two with unilateral exit, right? It's there is no trusted setup of any. It's like Lightning. It's proper like. It is a true layer two.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people have different definitions on what a layer two is and whatnot. And my definition is like a piece of different software. You transact Bitcoin off the chain. You can settle back on chain unilaterally without asking for permission. I guess that's the broadest definition. My definition too. And by that definition, it's a true layer two.
Mm-hmm.
There is Lightning. Well, Covenantless Arc is also another layer two. If you can run a server. Rollup is another layer two. Sidechains are a distinct category of their own, not quite real. Layer two is a multi-sig. There's also this like trust minimized protocols and BitVM. I guess it's own category.
Sidechains are just kind of like multi-sig service provision. You know, like multi-sig isn't possible in the dollar realm. So it's literally its own category of thing of like a conglomerate of companies. Or service providers, like
like it's multi-sig or merge mine of quorums or cross, like but you're trusting certain entities, which could in theory take your coins and not, of course, sidechains are not exciting enough for that reason. To some, I guess trust minimized protocols are like I guess the new cool thing, like one of n trust assumption instead of n of m because sidechains are n of like at least m minus n needs to be trusted versus one of n at least one needs to be trusted, so that's cool. That's an orders of magnitude you like improvement over self-custody. But like Lightning here, like rollup, it's not that, like it's true layer two in the sense that it has unilateral exits. So it just like Lightning, of course there's certain trade-offs like liveness. Lightning has to, right, you have to be comp check online if there is an invalid state. There's certain, like, it's a reactive model. You're opting into certain security model, but like, of course, it's trusted at its core, right? You're not relying on any. You're not relying or asking permission from anyone. You are the sole owner of your funds with unilateral exit. The early version of rollup relied on a trusted setup, but the new version doesn't. It's a state channel design. Versus the early version, it was a virtual UTXO based model. Here it's virtual UTXO plus virtual channel. So rollup, it extends on Arc. It's an extension. I was thinking to name it Arc VM, actually. Arc VM.
Arc VM.
But I thought then rollup is more catchy.
Yeah.
It extends on Arc. It is an extension. It's kind of like a layer on top of Arc. If you think about it, I wouldn't say it heavily borrows from Arc. Its concepts, it extends on Arc. Like it is Arc plus a state channel design plus VM DA. Like there's more to it. There's the Arc. It has Arc characteristics, but it also has rollup characteristics. And I thought rollup is a catchy name, so let it. So like it's a shared UTXO model, like Arc. It's shared UTXO and virtual UTXOs and connector outputs. liquidity provider. It's a liquidity protocol like Arc. In fact, we're using dynamic frost, like defrost. It's the new cutting edge thing. So it's like there's the operator, the entity, and who provides liquidity. It's just like a quorum. It's a quorum entity, but it's represented in a single key. And if you can add remove members without changing the key, it's a single entity, immutable, unchanged, fixed at all times. You can add remove members or change the setup parameters, N of M parameters, without changing the key, the full key. So it's like...
Interesting. Key. So you can actually update inside the Brolup without actually an on-chain footprint during the update.
Without an on-chain footprint, well, actually there's footprint in every session, right? But like, yeah, like without, in a more convenient way, let's say, like you can, like the design relies on updating the key, actually. But that's another thing. But like, yeah, like you have two keys, the dedicated key, the well-known key, who represents the operator. The operator is the block producer who produces the rollup blocks, who's also your channel counterparty to remote. It also provides liquidity, but we represent it in a single key at all times. But there is also the dedicated, like there is also the dynamic key, so dynamically changed and used in the channels. And the dedicated key, sort of the dedicated key, signs the dynamic keys. And we did this before for a we're doing this for dynamic for deterministic non-selection. For signing channel states, so to save bytes, like for the data availability layer, to you know, the signature is like the R value, S value, 32 bytes, 32 bytes, like 32 bytes each. To save 32 bytes from the nonce, we keep it dedicated. So if it's sort of like we're hard coding a set of nonces in a pool, hard coded in the client.
Okay.
You can also inscribe them in Bitcoin, but like you have this pool of hard-coded pre-selected gnosis. And you are sort of whenever you sign a state update from a channel, the virtual channels are also virtual here.
Yeah.
Like virtual channels. We're from virtual UTXOs. And like whenever you to update a channel state, you create a signature. The operator signs a state update in favor of the recipient. There's a signature, and the nonce, the signature, the public nonce is pre-selected from the pool, and you only put the S value, only inscribe, so to speak, you only put the date on Bitcoin, the S value. And that's also, it's also subject to the, like, witness discount, like 820, like 75% witness discount, so it's just 8 V bytes in size. Plus very compact data that represents the transaction, right? The summary, the transaction summary data, like who pays who by index, not the full keys, but like two byte indexes. It's an account model and we are indexing the keys. We like this unpub directory, which is gets dynamically changed according to a ranking system. So like we represent like who pays who, like from to value, like according to a rank-based ordering sequence system. And only the compact index number ends up in the block, consumes the block.
Basically a reference rather than the actual database, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. And the reference, not the key, full key, plus the S value, signature S value, which is 8 bytes, V byte in size, ends up in a block. Like it gets produced, like it operator puts the value in a block in DA, but it's all atomic, right? It's from sender to recipient, the data, you're making a payment from a channel to another, plus the data. It's like a payment plus the data in Bitcoin, versus Lightning, no data at all. It's all off chain. Here it's a very minimal data. If you run the numbers, you get 3-digit TPS. Like you have like 100, 150-ish TPS with this construction. Well, actually, even more, like something like 200 for plane transfers. If you were to do a plane transfer from an account to another and a value, especially it's a common recipient, a common value. Like if you're sending to someone who you are frequently transacting with, the frequent value gets even higher. But like there is we can also further reduce this. Like we can also further optimize the DA with a soft fork. Like if we have cat and checksig from stack, for instance, we can aggregate these individual S commitments in one. And that gives us, in theory, like if you have cat and stack, instead of like putting individual S values, we can only put their sum, the root, the effectively numerical root, and only publish the root on Bitcoin. And then, well, it gets us like 4-digit TPS. Like it gets us like, I run the numbers, up to like 1,600 TPS. Like 1,600 TPS in Bitcoin. Yet cat checks it from stack, like assuming it can optimize DI even further, like 10, like orders of magnitude, like 10x more. But like always room for optimizations. But the trick is like it's a state channel design, right? Like it's it's like Lightning, but it's public. You know who pays who. In a publicly verifiable way, you can reconstruct the state by just reading the bytes. Of course, Bitcoin only sees the bytes and the secondary clients interpret the bytes. And so that's the payments part.
I'm curious about something. This is a little bit of a tangent here, but since we've kind of brought it up a couple of times right now, is there are a number of covenant proposals. Like there's a ton of them actually now, it seems like. And checksig from stack, is that also essentially a covenant proposal, or is that more like when you mentioned cat and checksig from stack, are those interchangeable, or does the model actually need both of those to work as designed?
Yeah, so checksig from stack is not a covenant of code.
Okay, what is checksig from stack then?
Many people claim that, so it would it's effectively checksig, but you also have control over the what message is being signed, right? So and with checksig, you don't have control really over what message is being signed. The message being signed is the transaction you're transacting.
Okay.
And such, the sequence numbers, and so, like the transaction you're signing.
The transactions is this attached to the signature. Yeah,
transaction hash, right? That you're transacting is the message you're being sent, and you don't really have control over that, like a full control over that. And versus check from stack, well, it's like an arbitrary signature check operation, right?
You could sign anything in the
anything like an
signature
oracle
data. Or, yeah.
Yeah. And also, there's some trick to like combining checksig with checksig from stack to get the sig hash per image, the sig hash data onto stack, but well, it doesn't quite really work because you don't have control over the odd point, the input being signed. So it doesn't get us covenants, contrary to what many people claim. Checksig from stack, it's just an arbitrary signature checking operation on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You can sign hello world and well, it's valid. Let's go. Here you go. It's not a covenant opcode. When combined with cat, well, checksig from stack combined with cat gets us covenants. Well, cat alone, in theory, also gets us covenants.
Yeah.
It's smart tricks.
What is your feeling on cat? So the everything that I thought, everything that I was exposed to, especially towards the beginning of this, it seems extremely unintuitive. Like, and the difficulty is that, like, if I don't understand something, I am far less likely to just be like, sure, whatever. And I have slowly come more towards this direction just because Kat has the discussion about like how to put in clearer limits as to exactly how it can be used or what level of computation would be limited in how CAD is used. But what's your thoughts on the various Covenant proposals like OpVault, CTV, CAT, I guess TX Hash, I think, is a Covenant thing as well.
Lots of them. Yeah.
Give me your breakdown. What do you want out of it? Which one is the best one in your estimation? And which one would you say is the most secure, or the one that you're least concerned about, I guess, that still solves your problem?
I really don't know, man.
You don't know?
It's politics, yeah, drama, and everything. No, I'm pro Covenants.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been doing Covenant research and development for almost 4 years by now. Like, I built Bitmap Script Wizard, and they're all Covenants, the cutting edge stuff. I built an AMM with CAT and Liquid, and it's live in production today, and built a script IDE. Like, I've been doing Covenant stuff for almost 4 years by now. In fact, Brolab is a result of like 4 years long con research and development. Mm-hmm. I think it's the best form of what a Bitcoin Roll-Up could be. But Covenants, you know, politics. But aside from politics, like in terms of pure tech, a technical aspect, I'm pro Covenants.
Yeah.
We really had Covenants in Bitcoin today. I mean, for obvious reasons. I mean, Brolab works without Covenants, yeah, but Covenants make it a lot better.
Yeah.
A lot more efficient, a lot more, it scales it further.
Mm-hmm.
And makes implementation easier. I mean, I'm pro Covenants, period. I wish we had CTV real in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like, I really wish we had CTV in Bitcoin, like today. I really wish, but that's all I can do.
Yeah.
I can only wish, right?
Yeah.
CTV
seemed to me the simplest, like the most naive implementation, in the sense that, like, it's kind of easy to see its edges, you know, like what you can do with it. And it's also been around the longest, it seems like, from everything I've seen. And
in terms of technicality, yeah. Like, it's, yeah, it checks all the boxes. It's been around 4 years, and most whale testers and bounties, and it's the most, it's the simplest form of a covenant you could get. And it's quite efficient in what it does.
Mm-hmm.
But none of these things matter, right? Like,
yeah,
when it comes to politics, you know, politics, not,
yeah,
you know, it's hard to explain these things. But, like, I mean, of course, it's a good thing to, like, culturally in Bitcoin, you tend to be more on the, like, conservative, like, side of things. Like, we are tend to, like, you know, when you push for software, it, like, naturally triggers the immune system in Bitcoin, and the preserve it, like, on a conservative side, preserving Bitcoin. And, like, sort of, like, not quite receptive to changes, protocol stuff from Bitcoin. That's understandable. But, mm-hmm, like, CTV, I mean, I really wish it, but, like, Bitcoin is above all of us now. Like, it's, my opinion is not quite relevant. I mean, I really wish we had CTV. And we might have it, like, I don't know, or something like CTV V2, like TX Hash, mm-hmm, might work as well. Introspection of codes, I think it's not, like, I mean, it's super simple. Like we have them on Liquid and up and running for years. And
you're talking about things like CAT?
CAT is simple too, implement. Like, it's simple, very simple. But, like, there's a bit of a gray area, unknowns, whether it could enable certain things that might harm Bitcoin. Well, I'm not sure if it's true, but, like, you never know, it's Bitcoin.
Yeah.
CAT is, I mean, I do like CAT. Like, I mean, I wish we had CAT. Again, like, CAT, when it's combined with Checksec from Stack, it gives Brolab 10x scale.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's in the end up to the community to decide. It's really hard. It's a rough consensus.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to pick one software, it would be CTV. Really, yeah. Just one, blue CTV. If I had to, if it could pick three, that would be like CTV. If I had to pick two, that would be Cat plus Checksig from Stack, because you can emulate CTV that way. If I had to pick three, well, Cat, CTV, Checksig from Stack. Or, I mean, Cat,
does CTV always... and Checksig from Stack give any benefit together?
Sorry, what? I'm lost.
Does CTV plus Checksig from Stack give any benefit to like how a Brolup or Arc would scale?
We need cat plus like Checksig from Stack, really.
Gotcha. Okay.
CTV plus anything else don't work here in this construction. Well, I mean, to give Brolup a scale.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
To I mentioned earlier, you need cat plus Checksig from Stack. Like in cat, you could emulate anything almost. Like almost again. Like I mean, there's been some FUD around cat. Like mm-hmm. let's be real. I mean, cat is not going to magically like somehow like trigger some like unknowns and harm to Bitcoin. Like it's not going to weirdly somehow break Bitcoin. No, like come on, like
you don't find it realistic to the concerns that are typically pushed.
Yeah, like I mean, there's this whole concerns around. I mean, I understand these concerns. Like,
how long has it been on Liquid?
Oh my God. Okay. Well, been like, I guess since 2015. It's been there.
Oh, wow. So it's been there the whole time, basically. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Almost a decade now.
Yeah.
I mean, Cat, what it does is simple, but I'm not quite really buying into like it enables everything narrative. No, that's not true. Because you know what? Because you need tweak add to do recursive covenants, actually. Cat alone is not powerful enough. If you have cat alone, you cannot do anything. All you can do is introspection. You introspect stuff, great. You can do some Merkle tree verification and such, great. You could do like one-time short signatures, like zero conf transactions on Bitcoin, great. But like you cannot do anything. Come on, like let's settle on that at least. Let's be real. Like you cannot do anything. To do anything, you need tweak add combined with cat. And by that, you can do full introspect. Like you can do like fully recursive covenants. Because with Taproot, because we're adding Taproot to, we're adding cat, not to SegWit. We're adding it to Taproot.
Okay, yeah.
And we want outputs work with tweaking. Like it's not enough to introspect the script pubkey.
Mm-hmm.
You also need to be able to introspect its tap script. And effectively, tap script all the way to root is tweaked at it with the inner key. And then you get the script pub key. With cat, all you do is introspect the output, the script pub key, and that's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
You also need to be able to untweak the inner key out to get all the way down to the script, the tap script, to be able to actually introspect and change.
To basically require information again that was already previously required, in a sense, so that it could carry with it across time.
Carry state, yes. To carry state and change state being carried, you need optweak add combined with cat, and optweak add is what makes things scary.
Mm-hmm.
But cat alone, it's a FUD, right? Mm. It enables everything as a FUD. And Bitcoin transactions are self-isolated, right? What transaction is self-isolated from another and doesn't affect the other. It's an opt-in model, right? If you're using cat in your construction, it does not affect your any other. It only affects the transaction being that uses the cat, the transaction that contains cat in it, because cat constrains only the transaction it contains itself, like it contains the cat. Mm-hmm. Transactions are self-isolated, and cat alone is not, if in fact does not enable everything, because you can, all you do is introspection, plus the Merkle proof verification, and in fact one time show of signatures is great too, like for roll up. In fact, it could make things work zero-conf. I've been trying myself to do zero-conf like constructions in Bitcoin with one-time show of signatures, but I couldn't find a way really to do it like in Bitcoin. Like, no, you need really cat. Mm-hmm. Something like open, some bitwise stuff, mm-hmm. like or some data manipulation of opcode of some sort, or some checksig deterministic nonce. Like, cat adds a lot of value. It adds immense like value to Brawler. Like, mm-hmm. I can only speak to my project. It adds a lot of value. I am not buying into the FUD. It doesn't enable any, like, no. But it's irrelevant in the end, right? It's not my say, really.
Yeah.
What merged to Bitcoin, it's not my say. I'm sorry. It's irrelevant. I really try to stay away from politics as much as I can. Sometimes get involved a bit, but no, it's not right. I like drama in general. I like drama. I wish we had more drama. I guess discussions were heating up lately in BT. Great. Let's go. I'm thinking to print out something anti-opcat just to trigger drama. You know, mm-hmm. I'm pro-cat, but like let's be on the other side of like on the opposition side, no, for the mm-hmm. drama. Like, I'm thinking of print out some anti-opcat stuff, you know, like just to drop for drama, for the sake mm-hmm. of drama. I love drama. I don't know. Yeah, fun. But like, yeah, so covenants, regardless, I think I'm optimistic. Like, I'm optimistic in general. Like, we'll get covenants, I think, at some point, I guess. I don't know, at least I hope. But like, I think eventually, right?
It seems likely. It seems likely. There's enough, like, most of the argument is about what proposal, you know? Like, most of the frustration about it is the lack of consensus on which to do, rather than consensus on whether to do it, I guess, is...
But really, like, you need a proposal, like, you need a soft fork, an upcode, takes a champion, not only in the form of the author, but also in the form of projects. You do really need a project to champion the code.
Mm-hmm.
That could be work. That could be Brawlup. Could be any something else. The time tree. Brawlup is a form of time tree.
Mm-hmm.
Or Auric. Like, it could be anything really. Like some vault construction or whatever. Like, you need one or more projects worthy enough, compelling enough for Bitcoiners people to consider for them to run Signal at. Run the consensus changes in their nodes, and like for them, it needs to be compelling enough, and perhaps more to it. Compelling enough perhaps isn't enough, but like, again, in the end, like, it's not a paradox, right? If it's good enough, like, if people really find value, it's rough consensus, right? If enough people find value in something, well, then it's compelling enough for them to activate it, and otherwise not. Like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, it's not self-contradictory, you know, like, if there's value, really, then they'll activate it for their own benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, well, it's like natural selection sort of thing. Like, it's like either one or zero, right? Like, there's no middle ground. If it's beneficial, if people benefit, they'll activate. If not, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a paradox. and eventually, I guess we'll have some compelling enough use case.
Mm-hmm.
It's rough consensus, right? It's not like full consensus. So I guess people at least not like blindly in opposing covenants, right? Like, they are somehow open. I guess things have changed. Things have been changing over the past, like, say, 2 years. Like, people who've been like opposing Covenants, I guess, becoming more and more in favor of Covenants lately, yeah. I guess.
The controversy around it seems to have died a lot. Like, there's a lot less people arbitrarily against it, it seems like. Maybe just the energy has been sapped out of it.
Ossifications, yeah. I mean, ossification is low IQ. Period. Yeah. Ossification is low IQ. Like, literally. Like, it's low IQ, guys. Like, no. Please don't be... of course, like, at some point, yes, but the ossification now is low, low IQ. Mm-hmm. No. I don't even have respect for these people.
Yeah.
No.
I have a couple questions about ARC and Brolup in a slightly different context. So, talking about transactions per second and how these things scale, am I correct in understanding that the scaling capacity is largely in the volume within these systems, in the sense that if we have an ARC with 100 people in it and only one person does a transaction within 10 minutes, let's say I'm the service provider, I will still update it with one transaction and it will be a one UTXO to one UTXO update on chain. And essentially there will be no scaling benefit. It will just be a normal on chain transaction.
As if you were using an on chain wallet.
Gotcha. And then this is basically the same with Brolup, correct?
Yeah, it's a shared UTXO. Yeah. That's right,
yeah.
Sir.
It's
like ARC in that sense. I guess that goes for all shared UTXO-based models.
Yes.
So you got it. Suffer from the this onboarding problem.
Yeah.
In the onboarding phase, you've got, I guess, operator ideally should subsidize maybe fees for users to incentivize the use. Yeah, please go.
It would basically be like a tiny little futures contract for the ARC service provider. It's like, what fee do I pay to bring on this community? Like, you would almost want a community already built out in order to deploy this to for the volume. Now, in addition, there is no reason to send out a transaction to update if nobody does a transaction, right?
That's right. Like, yeah. You're not.
So you're just waiting for transactions to come in before any activity occurs.
You're not like transacting in regular intervals. You're transacting as long as there is a transaction.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's not. Yeah. Like, it's same for Brolup, for, I guess, telemetries, for ARC, and for, I guess, JUTXO-based models.
Okay. Cool. Is there any reason? Is there anything specifically that limits this, where the transaction that goes to the end user is actually a Lightning channel, and then people can still pay and use it as Lightning, and the liquidity changes happen as an ARC shared UTXO or a Brolup shared UTXO?
Oh, that's what Brolup works. Brolup is
That's right. Brolup is channels. The updates only occur when you're changing balances.
Yeah. So, maybe to clarify in the front, so ARC is one way only, like unidirectional.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, like, you have Bitcoin, you spend a coin, you create a new coin on an ongoing basis up until the time and the more velocity the protocol like it gets, the more liquidity you have to look out, and that's the problem, the concern people brought. Oh yeah, great. And of course, if you run it on 24-hour runs, that's not an issue. We covered that earlier. With versus Brolup, well, Brolup, you can run Brolup like on, you don't need to run a server, obviously. You can, Brolup runs on like 3-month rounds. You have a shared UTXO that expired in 3 months. That's quite a reasonable amount of time, right? For normies. And that means in every 3 months, and like on a monthly basis, you need to refresh your coins back to yourself to retain the liveness, the self-custody. And the reason it works is because it's channel design, right? It's not unidirectional, it's bidirectional. Mm-hmm. So you turn these UTXOs effectively. Don't get me wrong, we also have UTXOs here, like VTXOs, virtual UTXOs, shared UTXO, But what we do is we turn these VTXLs into virtual channels, right? I mean, we like this term virtual. It's kind of Bitcoinery thing, like the virtual bytes, virtual TXID, virtual VTXL. You know, we like this prefixing stuff. This specific prefix.
The naming convention.
Convention. Yeah. So virtual channel. It's a virtual channel. It's a payment channel yet to be broadcasted, but can be broadcasted unilaterally in any time and settled back on chain. Great. So it's a layer two. It's not a bare channel. It's virtual. Still, too often it's a channel. Maybe we can come to channel specifics a bit because it's kind of Allen symmetry. It's not like in the channel in the Lightning sense. It's Allen symmetry, symmetric, no revocation, no nothing. You can come to it in a bit, but
so you and I as channel partners would hold the exact same state rather than in Lightning where I hold a state that punishes you and you hold a state that punishes me to make sure that we agree on the current state.
Yeah, we don't have punishment here. It's kind of like L2, like ELTOO, the project. It's like L2. It's surprisingly, it's Allen symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, turns out we can do Allen symmetry in Bitcoin, like today. We don't need APO.
Mm-hmm.
I figured out how to do it. Literally. Yeah. Like, that's how Broadwalk works.
Yeah.
It's Allen symmetry. It's symmetric channel design. You've got the same state for both parties, to self, to remote. It's the same state.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't block the old states. You always overwrite them.
Mm-hmm.
Versus Lightning, well, it's really complex to design. Broadwalk channels are super easy to reason about. Like, no revocation. You don't revoke all, and I'll say you overwrite the earlier one with a higher precedence.
Yeah.
Using a degrading time lock scheme with tap trees. There's a bunch of
basically just with a later sequence so that it's always the latest one that will outdate the previous one. So as long as it just gets broadcast at some point, it will just replace it. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll replace with the higher one, the higher precedence one. It's kind of like, it's basically like a tap tree with, like, say, 64 leaves.
Mm-hmm.
That means the channel can get 64 state updates throughout its lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And in each leaf, you have a degrading time lock scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And when this channel gets broadcasted, then that's when this time lock starts triggered. Gets triggered because it's relative lock time, not absolute.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that and because it's a degrading scheme and you got 2 of 2 in each leaf plus a time lock, it means that you start from the first leaf, say has with an expiry of say 64 days. Mm-hmm. And the second leaf, 2 of 2, 63 days. Third leaf, 2 of 2, 62 days. And the fourth leaf and 61 and so on. And and that is the grading setup, and each and the more state updates you sign, the higher precedence the current channel state gets.
Mm-hmm.
And it means in the unilateral closure case, like the forced closure case, the channel state ends up in the block is the one that has the highest precedence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like tap tree mast plus the grading scheme. It's kind of a novel scheme, I guess. Bitcoin, I guess I made it up myself. Like it's a symmetric design, and no revocation.
Mm-hmm.
Also, no middle stages. Like we don't have middle state. We don't have HTLCs or PTLCs. Nothing. It's just two self and two remote.
Mm-hmm.
It's just me and partner party who owns who.
Yeah.
Really, that's it. And the payments are connect. We're connecting payments through like connectors. So typically how Lightning works is when you're to attempt a payment, you add a HTLC along the route all the way to recipient and it settles back and then all the way back to your node and you revoke the HTLC and with the pre-image. Like HTLC is being removed with the pre-image. It's quite a complex process overall. Versus here, well, no HTLCs. Payments are atomic. Like you have a channel, it's a payment channel. In order to make a payment, well, you are simply making like the counterpart and the recipient does not need to be online. It's offline. That's another thing. You don't have to be online. And what recipient? So it's me, the service provider,
mm-hmm.
who's also a channel partner, and channel partner of everyone, mm-hmm. every individual channels, and there's a recipient. And if I'm to make a payment from my node, my channel into the recipients, then what happens is the operator, who also happens to be channel partner of the recipient,
mm-hmm.
signs a state update in favor of the recipient and puts the S value in witness and adds a connector, virtual connector. It's a specific technical term. Connector mm-hmm. outputs is like technical thing used in BitVM, Rollup, Arc,
mm-hmm.
it's like a normal thing. Ensures the atomicity of payments. So it's basically S value sort of inscribed in Bitcoin, puts the data in Bitcoin, it's in a witness, and adds a connector output back to my channel, and I sign off with the 12.2 to ensure the atomicity. There's mm-hmm. some involved ZP magic sprinkle, but like it's effectively atomic. Like it's immediate atomic. Like Lightning payments are also atomic, but here it's immediate atomicity.
Mm-hmm.
Delayed atomicity. Payments achieve immediate atomicity simply by signing off.
Gotcha.
And recipient. So basically, we have two types of payments, like pay to S commitments. And this is when the channel partner, the recipient, has enough liquidity.
Mm-hmm.
And second, pay to VTXO. And that's when the channel partner has either no channel or no liquidity, enough liquidity in their channel. In that case, I pay out to a VTXO instead.
Gotcha. Yeah.
It's kind of like Lightning with mm-hmm. the Arc fallback.
Yeah.
It's Lightning payments by default. So it mm-hmm. scales. No, like you're using the existing liquidity you have.
Mm-hmm.
You're using the liquidity you have in your channels, so it scales in terms of liquidity, versus Arc it doesn't. Well, unless you're not running on like 24-hour rounds,
mm-hmm.
Here it scales well because it's a channel design. Also, I'm lost.
So, all right, let me prime this with a question then. So. The 64, you were talking about like needing to predetermine the nonces, and you have this like tap leaf tree with all of these preset transactions. So you need to update this once every 64 transactions with a new state for the whole thing, and or when liquidity changes for the individual users. So like, let's say I have a channel with 1 million sat worth of receive. If I'm receiving 1.2 million, the whole state needs to be updated, which means I get a new VTXO and we get an on-chain update and all that good stuff. So that's kind of where the limit of the how this scales comes in, is how often does that that channel itself need to be refreshed in order to keep liquidity and payments still flowing.
Yeah, that's a good point. So basically, like, that's also like distinct design, mm-hmm. It's a distinct design choice. Like, this is a mm-hmm. distinct design. I don't know how to say. Like, Lightning, it's you have a channel and it has no expiry in theory. Like, of course, mm-hmm. as you also have an interactive model and check or state updates, but like in theory, channel has no lifetime,
mm-hmm.
right? It's there to be for us. Sit there. It's meant to.
There's not a countdown. Like, it's just perpetual. Yeah.
Well, in theory, L2 has one, but like, it's kind of infinity. You
can feel
like, large enough of a number. Mm-hmm. But like, Lightning has no account number versus we do here. So we have channels with lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting concept to many and maybe surprising, but we have channels with lifetimes and two lifetimes. One, lifetime in terms of the number of state updates the channel can accommodate.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the channel expires after it hits the 24, like 64. Well, it's mm-hmm. in theory, practice is going to be 128, but for simplicity, say 64 state updates. When you hit the 64th state update in your channel, the channel is expired.
Mm-hmm.
Then what you need to do is refresh your channel into a brand new, fresh VTXO.
Mm-hmm.
You refresh your channel into a new VTXO. Or recipient has no channels, simply. Like, recipient has no liquidity, channels, and then you pay out to VTXO. or back to yourself to refresh, same thing. Or channel expires, channel also expires when its lifetime hits like 90 days. Like when you have a channel and it hits, like channels live under a VTXO.
Mm-hmm.
So like a channel sort of descant from a VTXO, and a VTXO nests under a shared VTXO. Mm-hmm. And when the shared VTXO expires, the VTXO expire. And when the VTXO expire, the channel expire. Mm-hmm. Therefore, channel expires when the shared VTXO expires.
Mm-hmm.
And that means a channel expires either when it hits 90 days or
64 payments.
It's 64 state updates.
Gotcha.
In your case, you refresh your channel into a fresh mm-hmm. one, a virtual one, which has no footprint, really. It's virtual.
Mm-hmm.
Refresh it, it's atomic, and then you continue to you refresh, kind of like swapping out your channel liquidity into a new channel. It's kind of like an off-chain to off-chain swap out.
Mm-hmm.
Virtual channel into a new virtual channel.
Gotcha.
From your own to your own, in a footprint minimum way. But you have to do it like in regular period, like month on a monthly basis, and that's mm-hmm. where sort of liveness interactivity trade-off comes in, which Lightning has something similar.
Mm-hmm.
With, yeah, the CLT, the Delta, I think.
Is there any reason why these also can't be bridged to Lightning, either A, through the ARC provider or the Brollup provider, or even through someone else in the Brollup or the ARC? Like, let's say we both have the same service provider and you're online. Is there any reason we can't do an atomic swap where I pay you in the Brollup and then you pay the Lightning invoice, and only if that payment goes through on the Brollup does the Lightning invoice valid, and vice versa?
Like, oh yeah, I mean, Lightning has a new narrative, right? This glue of all layer twos, right? Mm-hmm. Since it was here too,
okay.
It's Lightning compatible.
I figured that was the case, but I wanted to confirm.
Yeah. Better to double confirm, right? I mean, yeah, sure, it's a Lightning compatible. You can pay to a Lightning wallet or get paid from Lightning wallet. Just a bit of, I'm not sure if we are going to support this in the very first version. It's going to be more of a future soft fork, some sort of a future protocol extension thing, because mm-hmm. there's a bit of a complexity there. You know, because it's going to be defrost, like dynamic frost, and like that dynamic frost like entity also needs to run a Lightning node. And then you would need PTLCs for that, because HTLCs, you need to create a pre-image. Well, but how on earth a defrost federation can create a pre-image? You would need PTLCs, and that means we would need to wait for PTLCs for that.
Okay.
That's why.
That doesn't require a soft fork, though, right? That's just a Lightning.
No. We Taproot. That's a Taproot.
Yeah, yeah, that's Taproot. Yeah.
So we would probably need to wait for PTLCs for that.
Okay.
Sort of a protocol like extension thing, the interoperability. But it's interoperable with on chain Bitcoin, like mm-hmm. UTXO. You could peg in, peg out on chain Bitcoin, trustlessly.
Sweet. Dude,
yeah, Lightning.
You've been busy.
I don't know. Time flies, really. I have no idea how time flies, really. Time flies is this interesting.
Dynamics. What are you most excited about? Like, what? Which one do you think is the better solution, and do you think meets the kind of needs of where you feel the community is going and where people are? The direction that a lot of these tools are building for the L2 proposals?
Oh, well, I don't know, really. Like, I can't really speak of the other projects because mm-hmm. I'm not keeping that close eye on other projects, really.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not necessarily I'm selfish, no. Like, I'm just not interested, really.
Yeah.
Like, I can barely keep up with my own thing.
Yeah.
Because myself, like, I jump from an idea to another, tend to, but, like, I'm settled on this one because I think it kind of checks the boxes and kind of has the like kind of is appealing because
mm-hmm.
also the smart contract part, we haven't covered that, but like basically it's payments plus smart contracts. You know, lots of layer twos emerging lately. Mm-hmm. I can speak to that scam, I guess. Like, no, they're not all scam, but like I guess they seem to be scams. Like these layer twos emerging, they're all multi-sig, I guess. But like, I don't know, really. I don't know, like I barely can keep up with my own thing.
Yeah.
I don't really can say much to the other projects. Arc is great. I think Arc is compelling because, again, like if you run a server, it's great. And for privacy, it's great. But I mean, I personally don't want to build a mixture myself. Like I don't have the bulk. I wouldn't have that thing. I'm not as bold as Tiero now. Like,
Do you know of a implementation? Like, is there a use? Does somebody have a wallet running with Arc in a test scenario, or like something to play around with?
Not really. No, I haven't been keeping up in Bitcoin space either.
Yeah,
I actually had a bit of a break. Actually, like been months and back to like Bitcoin. I guess 2 months ago. Because a lot have happened since then. But like, yeah, so they did, I think Arc have like released 0.2, which is as a covenantless version and being a bunch of other things bundled. It's cool. It works. It's magic. Really, I mean, I'm really proud of Arc and I mean, great. I mean, I'm glad people are building on it, like building it. I mean, building it, not on it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Or what's also interesting about Arc is it's modular in that like it's not a state channel design. Like it can build like all sorts of use cases, not all like you can do on Bitcoin, like escrow payments and and whatnot. But like with Arc versus Lightning, it's just payments routing. Well versus rollup, well, I mean with the smart contract stuff, like you know, rollup, it's a payment rollup. Well, also got the smart contracts, but like effectively you can run a virtual machine on top of, like on top. So best way to think of rollup is like this payment layer. It's a payment layer. It's a layer two. It's an off-chain protocol with unilateral access and it's all public and pros and cons there. But like on top of the payment layer, we can build, it's more of a layered approach, right? You can build another layer. The smart contracts layer. And this the smart contracts in this context are not like smart contracts that you that you know and think like they're not like as like I mean they're not like fully capable functional smart contracts you think and know and like know. I mean I'm pretty sure Bitcoiner is not quite feeling with smart contracts, but like not average DeFi user does, but like. So my contracts in this context are more like they don't hold the custody of Bitcoin, but rather they are facilitators of P2P, like they sort of like they can execute off-chain logics, like conditions, execute smart contracts and any arbitrary condition based on payments.
Gotcha.
Based on P2P payments, like
so, essentially, whatever the output of the software is, will be kind of like a multisig. It's the determining factor in whether or not the exchange happens.
Right. So effectively, yeah, like smart contract checks whether if a payment made or not, and what amount from what to like, and checks it and like executes the smart the condition. Whatever arbitrary condition that is, according to the payment condition.
Gotcha.
The expectation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out it's a powerful of a primitive. It's quite powerful primitive that it could give you like 90% of DeFi use cases. Like better, it's stable coins. Of course you can do stable coins. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I've been to El Salvador. No one gives a shit about Bitcoin. Let's get real. They all want stables. They all care about stables. Some don't even accept Bitcoin. Stable still big thing. I think hyper-Bitcoinization is years, decades away from reality. I think we'll get there, but not now. So stables are great. I mean, at least what I see, but I'm a bit of opportunities myself. Of course, I believe in hyper-Bitcoinization. It's going to happen sometime, but not quite now. I mean, product
market. I think we greatly overestimate what can happen in like 3 years. But I also think we underestimate what can happen in 10. I have early 2030 to 2034 as like things are moving fast. And I think the normalization of it is I'm not looking 20 years out, in my opinion, but
okay,
that's a different discussion.
A bit of a shorter time frame, yeah. I guess it's accelerated. Yeah. Things don't go linear, right? Perhaps an accelerated pace, but yeah, sure. But I mean, yeah, great. I mean, Rollup is a payments rollup. It scales Bitcoin potentially to 4-digit TPS, potentially. But for a momentary digit TPS, it's great, compelling enough. I guess you could run B2B on Arc and B2P on Rollup. Great, and run the entire planet. I mean, hopefully, because there could be other concerns around bandwidth and such. But like in theory, at least, like from pure on-chain footprint, that's the entry barrier, right? Like the upper bound, right, or the lower bound? Yeah, lower bound. Like the block space, at least standpoint, it scales, could scale in theory the 4-digit TPS. The optimizations. It's great. I mean, it's ready. It will be ready hopefully by then. Let's hope Rollup will be ready by then. Hopefully, like when hyper-Bitcoinization. Well, I mean, depends. But like, in the meantime, yeah. Let's do stables, and that's what people demand apparently. Or you can trade like stables for Bitcoin. Could do like AMMs and order books, with Bitcoin on Rollup. You could do like inscriptions, NFTs. So like what you can do in Rollup, you can trade NFTs, not necessarily because I'm endorsing NFTs, but because like the thing is like it's a scaling tech. Like Rollup scales Bitcoin, not only Bitcoin, but it also scales the degenerate use cases, such as NFT trading or transfers, like trading. Could build NFT marketplaces and roll up, like say you have an NFT piece, you could bridge your ordinal into here with a one mate bridge, and you can trade it against Bitcoin, like trustless. You can have like ordinals Bitcoin, like spot auctions,
basically atomic swap auctions that have a third party or whatever that isn't even involved. They can't confiscate the exchange,
right. Trustless atomic exchanges between assets in a much, much scalable way than PSBTs. Because when you do atomic swaps with PSBTs, that will take like 300 V-bucks.
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
I think we've seen it, the climate, right? And the mempool clogging up the network a lot. Versus Umbrella, if you do Umbrella, it reduces down to 3 V-bytes. From 300 to 3 V-bytes.
Yeah.
Could you trade like assets, like it scales trading degeneracy by 100x? So that's I think
it scales trading degeneracy by 100x. By 100x. That's the tagline of this episode.
right. I think that's good for Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That's Bitcoin's benefit.
That's always to me, like aside from the explicit which I don't think it's scales economically from this idea, but there's been so much push to make it as inefficient as possible on Bitcoin, like almost like a ha ha ha, look what I can do, look how much shit I can put in your park, you know. And so, but the thing is that it doesn't, I don't think it survives like that, because you're explicitly incurring a cost for something that has not been able to maintain value. Like you've seen kind of these cycles of the degeneracy comes back, or the halving happens and everybody wants to get their NFT in the halving block, but then it like tapers off so fast, and nobody wants to pay $2,000 transaction fees to put, you know, a photocopy of their ass on the blockchain. And so whatever market does actually exist, I think the solution is to give them the most efficient place to go be retarded, in my opinion, but whatever, like go do your thing, I don't really care. But on a roll up, it doesn't bother me. It's not it's not in, it doesn't pollute the chain itself. It uses the chain for the validation and the ownership that they want. So cool. Just build a more efficient thing. And the other one will just economically commit suicide. So just give it time.
Yeah. It's quite efficient. Like 3-digit TPS, like for like non-Bitcoin transaction types, like trading tokens for tokens, or like, I don't know, some yield farming, whatever, like these type of transaction types, it scales up to like 600 TPS as it is, like the protocol by default, like it scales very well in terms of like the transactions per second. It does it really well. I mean, surprisingly, and on Bitcoin, and it's just so surprising. And like, and in like payments plus like smart contracts, all verifiable, public, scalable. Scalable is like, it's more scalable with Covenants, of course. Because it's a state channel design, hence, like the way it works is like, yeah, we have a shared UTXO which is trustless, because it's bound by N of N music, and you're part of it. That's why it's trustless. But like when you're offline, and you don't have enough liquidity in your channel, that's when you receive a channel in terms of a bare UTXO. We call it a bare lift output in Brolab terms. But like, if you, there are like two ifs: if you're not online and you have not enough liquidity, then you receive a channel, like you receive a VTXO in the bare form of the UTXO.
And that's basically the one that you need to get an update from. You need to have a copy of. Yeah.
That's what Covenants solve. That like that little bit friction, the fallback. You know, it falls back to a bare UTXO. And it has not enough liquidity. The fallback for that little bit fallback option to scale that even further, we need a common.
Gotcha.
And with that, well, it's a state channel design, it's a state update. Great. And channels live under shared UTXO, especially when you'll refresh them. When you refresh channels, you refresh them into a fresh one under a new UTXO, shared UTXO. And that's how you're rebalancing, sort of like rebalancing channels, the liquidity. Because shared UTXO model fixes two things. First, the footprint. Second, rebalancing. Rebalancing the liquidity. Here, we're not with the shared UTXO model, the covenantless Brolab version, the version that exists, the idea. It does not solve the footprint problem, right? Because we don't have covenants, and you start all with the bare channels, right? You have bare channels, which only when you refresh them gets into, like, which then, like, when you only, when you refresh the channel, then only it becomes part of the shared UTXO, because then it's trustless, because you can bound a covenant by N of N, a trustless covenant. And that shared UTXO model, not necessarily for scaling again, but for rebalancing. Because the main problem Lightning has is to rebalance the channel, like in terms of on-chain rebalancing, I'm talking about, not Lightning, like on-chain rebalancing.
To splice in or splice out.
Splicing out in and out, in terms of rebalancing the actual liquidity, splicing in and out, you need an on-chain transaction, which is not quite efficient. You have a channel, you splice it out, the new channels, the remaining channel state. Effectively, with that splice out, you need to form another channel, ideally. One in and one out. So like it is, how many V bytes there? 5 times, say 40. 200 V bytes versus here.
Versus 3 or whatever.
Versus here, it's just an output, just a single output.
Okay.
And gotcha. It's a lift output. Also, you also need to claim it. like when you're when you we have a specific term, lift up. You are lifting a bare output into a virtual, lifting it up.
Yeah.
So when you receive a bare UTXO,
mm-hmm.
called lift output, and you're lifting it up to a virtual.
Gotcha.
When you're
okay.
online, because online you can lift it up with the components you're involving in the end of mm-hmm. end, thick. And the entire process is just one out, one in, sort of like 99 V bytes. No other fields, like all other fields are shared, like mm-hmm. end version, such like the and like lock time, they're all shared. It's only like 99 V bytes
mm-hmm.
to effectively splice out and in.
Yeah.
Versus Lightning, it's probably more than 200 V bytes.
Mm-hmm.
So like, and that's the fallback. That's the fallback, right?
Yeah.
You are doing in the fallback case. Versus like default case is a channel state update.
Mm-hmm.
But to scale that even further, you need a component.
Yeah.
To remove that the tiny little bit friction. We need a component like CTV that I favor. And
So what's the state of Brolup? Like, what's the where's development on this? How long have you been working on this?
Yeah, I'm single. I'm building it myself, and I've been doing it for, I think I made it public about 2 months ago. Time flies.
Okay, yeah.
Building it for about a month and mm-hmm. a half. So I'm building a library at the moment, like the output types, the entry types. The tap tree, I built the taproot library myself,
mm-hmm.
like the taproot library myself, then realized there is already one in BDK. I'm also learning that along the way.
Yeah.
I've moved into the, from library into the defrost part, the R&D. I'm trying to, my goal for the next few weeks say is to build a defrost implementation in Rust for the dynamic federation quorum thing for the operator, because we need to be able to represent the operator
mm-hmm.
single key at all times and hard code the set of prefix nonces in the pool in the software. Because if the val non key, the operator key, is to change
mm-hmm.
in certain pairs, then the public nonces must also change. That the pool hard coded the, and we're doing mm-hmm. this again, 5 bytes and signature by half, the cut bytes by cutting that by half, we need to hard code a set of precyclic nonces. And the defrosting also goes into these nonces. And to keep them hard coded at all times and not update them. The problem is not to update the key. The problem is to update these nonce, the set of nonces.
Yeah.
You don't want to re-update them. We want to like keep them as it is, and like they're immutable. They're hard coded, fixed.
Yeah.
And to.
So basically, you know where you are in the sequence, and like it's always a static reference. Yeah.
It's the software, right? So
yeah.
The software knows who owns what and what channel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's all public. It's a global state. Maybe you have 3 channels. I have like 6 channels, virtual channels.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's known by everyone. You're like, whose channel destination? What? Whose channels? Like, what is like? What's your channel destinations are?
Mm-hmm.
What shows your channels you live in? And what's your channel state is, the state number is how much you own, like in your channel, and your operator owns in a particular channel. And that's how it works. The global state works, mm-hmm. right? That's how VM can validate payments. Because the VM, the virtual machine, needs to be able to verify payments, right? If I'm to send you sats from my channel to yours,
mm-hmm.
it needs to be known by everyone. What's everyone's channel destinations are and the values
yeah.
are and the numbers are, but it's all publicly known. And the VM can then validate it and execute, say, conditions accordingly. Let's give an example. I list an NFT for sale on the Brolop.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a bridge ordinal, or it could be its own thing. And you have sats. I don't have sats. I just have this asset. I listed on Brolop marketplace and on an NFT marketplace in Brolop.
Mm-hmm.
It's a smart contract. And I listed for, say, one Bitcoin. And you come along, and make a transaction call.
Mm-hmm.
You're calling the contract, the buy method, with the payment, right? It's a payable construct. It's a payable condition.
Mm-hmm.
And the contract check, you're paying one Bitcoin to me, right? If I have enough liquidity, one Bitcoin, it's going to be off-type pay to VTXO. You're going to pay a VTXO.
Mm-hmm.
In the form of bear, in the bear form, because yeah. I'm offline, in the bear form, and it's a lift output I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But if I have enough liquidity, it's going to be in the form of a state update, which is a lot more compact
mm-hmm.
inside, because you're literally not creating a virtual UTXO on UTXO set, right? It's just
yeah.
data.
You're just moving inside the tap tree.
Right. So basically, whether it's pay to VTXO or pay to SCOM, S commitment, the contract verifies the payment and then considers everyone then like and credits the NFT, the asset
mm-hmm.
to you. Now credit it with the NFT. Like it gives you the ownership. It moves the ownership because the ownership of a non-Bitcoin asset, it's a client-side thing. It's evaluated within a client-side context, right?
Mm-hmm.
Versus Bitcoin. Well, of course, Bitcoin can also be evaluated because it's all verifiable publicly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, VM knows all channels and the locations, the values and states. Everyone knows it. But Bitcoin is also enforceable on chain because you can do unilateral exits. So your coins are enforceable off-chain and verifiable off-chain. Smart contracts, on the other hand, they are verifiable off-chain too,
mm-hmm.
right? That and if you combine the two, like payments and smart contracts, basically data. So you're deriving the payment info from the data, very compact. You're calling the contract. First contract is also byte data deployed back in the history.
Mm-hmm.
And VM executes the contract according to the payment if it's made, whether it's pay to VTXO or pay to SCOM, it executes the contract and credits and moves the ownership
mm-hmm.
by asset. Now you're the owner. And then everyone can, like, you can see it on the block explorer and everyone can validate it. And I'm the owner. I'm the owner of Bitcoin now in the form of virtual coin. It's virtual.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the owner of the asset now. But of course, like,
you know, the major use case here is, I mean, obviously there's all the, like, if we wanted to move DeFi onto Bitcoin in some sort of a scalable way, like, that's clearly something at least that has some sort of a market now in the degeneracy of just like token exchange as a market. But what's interesting about this, especially from the context of a smart contract, is that there's no need for this to be like these are arbitrary electronic services, essentially. So because this is totally arbitrary for what code is run, genuinely any kind of market can be run on top of this. Like rather than buying an NFT, like I love your example, but using me, I will offer you 10. No, I don't want the NFT. I'm not going to pay a Bitcoin for the NFT. But sure. The funny thing is that this could literally be digital, like genuine art. Like this could be a print for something. This could be download for a movie or a file, access to a key for a file somewhere. It is genuinely arbitrary about what is unlocking this smart contract if you just have visibility into the code that's unlocking it. This could allow a marketplace, kind of like a BISC type of marketplace, to emerge from this that can essentially set buy and sell anything that has some sort of digital piece of information as its ownership, which from the context of a digital environment, a license key and or a decryption key is like a perfect thing to just attach to this. I mean, good Lord, the number of times I've gotten, all I can think is like for a subscription or for getting access to software or something, this could be like a huge tool, because your license key could literally be in the actual payment. It could be the thing that unlocks the payment. So all I ever have to do is go back to the payment in order to get the license key for my software to unlock that or whatever it is. Like DaVinci Resolve, you have to unlock, and I've installed it on my Linux machine and my Mac and like a couple other things. And I have the license key, but I lose it. It takes me, like, when I'm putting it on a new machine or like I'm swapping machines, it takes me like 30 minutes to find the license key. Sometimes I'm like, God bless, where the hell is it? And it would be cool to actually have it in the marketplace where I was purchasing all of those things, you know, to like actually have it built into the smart contract where my literal receipt number is the thing that unlocks the software or the data. Yeah,
that's right. I guess it's up to our imaginations. That's the limit.
Yeah.
Imagination. Could be that degenerate or non-degenerate. I think number one is going to be order book, right? Tether Bitcoin order book, right?
Yeah.
People's going to trade Bitcoin for dollars.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the major number one use case here.
A world with stablecoins is going to be really interesting. You know, especially on Bitcoin, and when we have markets like this, like being able to do quote unquote DeFi, a peer to peer stablecoin to Bitcoin marketplace, and have a genuine market price that does not have some restriction about border or jurisdiction or some explicit regulatory limit around how it can behave, because it can bridge in any jurisdiction. Its jurisdiction are agnostic. And the interesting thing about that, because it's funny, because I've been talking about this in the last couple of episodes, and I read Mark Goodwin's and Whitney Webb's piece on, I'm not sure if you've heard about this, about the problem with stablecoins in the ability to actually expand, to basically go from the petrodollar to the Bitcoin dollar system, where they can tie that value in the dollar to Bitcoin's rise, such that they can actually bolster the dollar alongside the success of Bitcoin.
Right.
But what's interesting is that this also, at the exact same time, if stablecoins become more prevalent and more directly useful, like I can take a stablecoin to Walmart, or I can pay my contractor in stablecoins, or I can deposit stablecoins into my bank, well, then that also creates, creates a massive undermining of capital controls and the ability to actually control pricing in the dollar market, which means that something like this in a kind of DeFi setting could provide a massive amount of liquidity that is directly external to direct banking infrastructure or to a permissioned, like ACH, Bank of International Settlements sort of thing. Like, you could basically build your own marketplace. Like you said, is anybody who could run a server. I could run a marketplace between Bitcoin and Tether or whatever dollar stablecoin, and actually be a meaningful amount of liquidity and volume in the global price of Bitcoin versus the dollar. And I can service customers in India, in China, in Hong Kong. Like, it is open like the web, you know? If you can get a connection, you can be a part of that marketplace. And it's weird. It's weird because there is this, stablecoins bolster the dollar, but then they also undermine the control over the dollar market at the exact same time. And something like this means that we can provide service provision, We can build these markets without banks.
Not only build, but also it could be our own liquidity provider. Build
exactly. Exactly.
Your own pair, maybe like your own coin, stablecoin version, a partially backed or fully backed, whatever. But you could always you know, provide liquidity, and liquidity could always be there.
Mm-hmm.
And you could effectively pick in and out, and you could basically build contracts that could accept only maybe for whatever arbitrary condition, only your own stablecoin type.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like you could scale that up to, I guess, to any use case I want. Also, this goes more a lot more into, I guess, level of trust and Web 5 stuff, because if you're mm-hmm. You can think of Brolab as really a subset of Web 5, really. Mm-hmm. So there's Nostrum and there's Brolab too, because if you're using the NPUBs here, well, then you leave a footprint behind every transaction you make, and for whatever reason, for any arbitrary condition, like contract we're executing, whether it's plain transfer or contract call, you leave a footprint behind, mm-hmm. and that's part of your identity. That defines you, who you are, really. It's up to debate whether it's a good thing or bad, but I mean, that's how Nostr works. That's all publicity, yeah. by mm-hmm. default. But here's the same, it's publicity, it's all public. And the footprint you leave behind on Brolab, it defines who you are and like your identity. It defines who you are again, like just like Nostr, the posts, the interactions you make on Nostr, posts you like, and they post, shit posts, like transactions you make on Brolab collectively defines who you are. And based on the data of the footprint here is quite like immutable.
Yeah.
Unlike it defines who you are, and it perhaps you could build like some credits, since like you could do lending, borrowing based on reputation model mm-hmm. and such on Brolab, hopefully. Like, i.e., you can give people credit scores based on their footprint, and you can basically lend, borrow money. and you can borrow money people based on your credit score, and it's enforced by the social circle. Like it's not enforced by a law or gun, like it's not enforced by a law, but it's by social pressure.
Basically, the value of your reputation is that you kill your ability to do business with anyone else if you revoke a contract. So they're saying that your ability to do business in the future is based on your capacity to pay back what you owe right now. And right. You can actually attach those together,
it costs your reputation to violate a social contract. So mm-hmm. Brolab is not only meant for smart contracts, it's also for social contracts
mm-hmm.
of any kind you can build, and it costs you maybe not collateral, because it's not collateralized, but your reputation and mm-hmm. invalidate a contract, social contract, which is really hard to build and expensive. So reputation, yeah. it's so hard to it's hard to obtain, but too easy to destroy.
Yeah,
and it's at stake in this type of constructions, and it I guess works well. So, and that's unlike we've seen in the Ethereum Web3 space. Like, Web is, we call it Web5 for a reason, right? And there is a lot more to it, right?
Yeah.
It's not only degeneracy, there is a lot more to it. Hopefully, we'll see the use cases emerging in Brolab. Of course, we have to first ship Brolab.
Yeah.
Right? It's a hard thing. It's a pain in the ass, really. Shipping things is hard. No,
that's the hard part. That's the hard part.
Yeah. Bitcoin culturally tend to, you know, build fast, not build fast, break fast, but to build slow and steady, you know, culturally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To get things right, and because it's a single shot thing, I guess. But like,
well, we can go ahead and just implement CTV and get that soft fork in next week, and then things will move right along. We'll just push that through.
I think Brolab could be a good champion for CTV. I think it's a compelling enough of a use case, really. I believe to activate CTE because Broloff, it's first of its kind, mm-hmm. really. It's time-after implementation, if you think about it. I don't think there is any other time-after implementation out there. Well, Arc is categorically a time-after, but mm-hmm. like I'm talking about time-after in the sense that Lightning plus expired outputs, right? So yeah. it's effectively a time-after, and I guess that's way to scale Bitcoin. Well, Arc, like scale Bitcoin for P2P, mm-hmm. and to scale Bitcoin for B2B or P2B, Arc is the way. Right, because mm-hmm. you can, the moment, as long as you can opt into a reactive model by running a server,
mm-hmm.
you get the benefit, the privacy benefits, the scalability too, because Arc in 24-hour rounds could be more efficient than timeout trees, because in timeout trees it's still a Lightning design, mm-hmm. although it gets spliced out and rebalanced, or whatever, in certain periods, it's still liquidity is still there for a moment, for some time, unutilized. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Still some liquidity there sits there for a certain period, but versus Arc, well, it's just a day.
Mm-hmm.
So then, yeah, like it really depends.
Rolls over really quick. Yeah,
rolls over quick, and like and Arc, I guess adds a lot of value in there. For B2B, P2B. Privacy, dark, but like yeah, something like Broloff, or Timeout, some Timeout.
Mm-hmm. Uh oh. Did you change on the device? Uh-oh.
All right, I think I'm back. So we are closing out real quick, right? Because I have like 5% battery.
Yeah, no worries. No, let's just go ahead and get right into it, and we can go ahead and just close it up. So sorry we got disconnected there, but we were kind of hitting the point where we were talking about where this is going to be going, and you know, the coming like year and where your development is headed and the work that you're doing and what we can apply this thing to. So how about we just, because we're dead on battery here, let's give some closing thoughts and kind of what you're hopeful for where this is going, and then also tell people where they can find you and explore ARC and that sort of stuff.
Right. So yeah, you can reach me out on Twitter and Brock. I guess it's quite a unique name by itself. Like, I'm this like bug eating bug profile on Twitter. So you can find me, you can feel free to reach out to me in DM if you have any questions. And if you're interested in learning more about Brawlup, you can go visit brawlup.org, like brawlup.org.
Brawlup.org.
If you're interested, you can learn some protocol stuff there, and you could reach out to me personally. We also have a community Telegram group, Brawlup community. Feel free to join and ask questions, any questions that you might have. Happy to help. It's exciting times overall. I mean, exciting times to be in Bitcoin, as always. It's exciting times, a lot's happening in Bitcoin, so I guess it's becoming really hard to keep up with things in Bitcoin. Day after day, week after week, and month after month. Well, lots happening in exciting times, and covenant discussions we're heating up to. I'm overall optimistic. I think Brawlup is worthy of an idea to implement and work on. I guess it's just worth building and contributing to, I think.
Yeah.
It's overall, I think, it's overall good for Bitcoin. I think it scales Bitcoin in many ways and brings use cases to Bitcoin. It works as it is, no protocol changes needed. So I'm excited about it, and I'm optimistic. All it takes is to ship. I guess, yeah, ARC Labs doing a great job shipping ARC, and I'm working on Brawlup, which is another thing. And overall, optimistic about it. But it's going to be a long journey for sure.
Yeah.
But again, it's at least worthier of an idea.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of crazy because we're getting so many layer two ideas. And even state chains are kind of becoming, like, I'm starting to see those roll out in actual implementations as well. We've got ARC, we've got Brawlup now, we've got a Lightning, obviously. Then there's a couple of other iterations of improvements to Lightning. Then there's this Hedgehog idea that is kind of taking a big part of what you did with ARC and how you created the VTXO idea. So there's literally, and then you put on top of that Fediment and eCash and all of these other multi-sig things. It's just, it's exploding wide. Like it's going horizontal very, very quickly. And it's going to be very, very exciting to watch what kind of rises from that as like major use case tools. And I think one of the things that Brawlup and even ARC really have going for them is the degree of software and just kind of like programmability, agnostic to program, that can be built, like smart contracting systems and stuff that can be built on top of it. And that's really exciting, because I think that's something that's been wholly untouched. It's extremely nascent when it comes to using that for Bitcoin. Because the only use case so far has essentially been trading shitcoins. And so that's been off of Bitcoin. So I'm really interested to see what comes of it outside of the explicit shitcoin market. You know, else can we apply this to? So it's super exciting. Dude, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on and breaking down the details with me.
My pleasure, really.
Thanks, yeah, man. Yeah, man. Great to have you on, and maybe in another year we'll roll back around and get an update on where Brolup is, and we'll get to see a year of Arc as implemented, as something that can actually be used. That's also something to just point out for everybody. You can use Arc. You can explore now. You can go look at that code, and you can deploy it. And if you're trying to build a wallet or something, that's something to absolutely consider, to look into, because we haven't seen this in action yet, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, it's still in the ideation phase, and you love to build it. I'll be more than happy to join again here, like in the show, maybe in a year or two, you know, you never know.
You never know. You never know, man. Dude, thank you for what you build. Thank you for joining me, and I'll catch you on the next one. Later, boss.
Take care. All right.
All right.
I guess I really have to leave.
Yeah, no worries.
Worries about to die. Thank you, man. Again, really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Hell yeah. Looks like we're uploaded. I think we're good to go. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep in touch on Noster then. Also, to Twitter might as well work.
For sure. For sure, man. Hit me up if you need anything.
I'm more active on Twitter, though, but anyway. Yeah, okay. Thanks really for playing.
Yeah, man.
I wish you a great rest of the day.
Yeah, same too. Same to you, man. Stay busy.
All right.
Catch you later, dude.